He's wearing a Roddy Collins jacket. He's got his teeth done like Ross from Friends. He's looking magnificent, and he's ready to go.
Just for the pod, lads.
Just for the pod.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Now, welcome along Wednesday Night Rugby. I have someone in studio with me, which doesn't always happen these days. Andy Dunn, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Joe.
And Matt Williams, you are somewhere in sunny France, I take it.
Cold France. Hey, Dan. Hey, Joey. Good to see you.
Andy was just telling me, this is going to make a few people feel old, 20 years since Leinster's Celtic League win, that famous game against Munster. You're having an anniversary this Saturday, been shown to the crowd at the Aviva. Are you coming over, Matt? Suit bought?
I am, mate. I am. Coming over with great trepidation. There's been some text messages flying around. It's going to be a great day. Really looking forward to seeing a lot of the guys, especially with COVID and things. Haven't seen a lot of people for a long, long time. And the staff are all getting together, which is wonderful. Willie Anderson's coming down from the north for the day, and Freddy Igo and Francis, a great physio. We're all coming along, so it'll be a great day. Can't believe it's 20 years, though. Dunner was just a child. We couldn't get him in. He was underage, I think. Well, he was like about age now, Dunner, I think.
Mentally underage, for sure.
That was a fun team.
It was a lot of fun, yeah. I mean, it was a lot of fun and also a lot of talent. Like, to win, even on the day itself, with, I'm sure Matty remembers it in greater detail than myself as a head coach, but Eric Miller getting red carded pretty early on, and the likes of Paul Wallace having to do 65 minutes as a tight head on his own effectively, some heroic stuff, and then a lot of skill in some of the two tries in particular in that second half, and also at a time where Munster were probably perceived to be well above the regular kind of standard of Leinster at that stage. So it was a pretty good starting point, I think, for Leinster's 20 years of continued or interrupted success following that. But it was, yeah, good fun, as you said. Good fun. Well, interesting.
I meant fun to watch. I suspect you're talking about other kinds of fun.
It was just fun in general. Fun games, yeah. General fun, yeah.
Willie Anderson was on recently with us, Matt. I remember reading his book. I didn't ask him about that game. There were so many other things to talk to him about. But from memory, he seems to remember in that game, or I seem to remember him saying in the book, that somewhere during the game, he realised if there were gaps there, and the thing to do was to run the ball against this Munster team. I don't know if you have a memory of that.
Yeah, it's really funny, Joe. I've never actually watched the game again until the lockdown. And, some really kind people at RTE and TG Kaha in particular sent me the game. They put it out when we were all getting locked down. I watched it again. And it certainly brought back a lot of great memories. We actually kicked the ball away in the first half like you would not believe. And that was part of that team's illness at the time. We had this incredible talent, as Andy said, like just such a talented group of guys. And the second half, they did what Leinster should always do, and part of the DNA of the club now, they ran it. And when they did run it, they scored some magnificent tries. One, Shane Horgan was man of the match and was absolutely unstoppable. And as Dana said, based on the forwards, we had a seven-man pack for 60 minutes, and that took on Munster's incredible pack as they were there with Foles, and Axel was number eight, and Paul was in the second row with Mick Galway and Frankie Sheen, and it was a really monstrous pack. And as the best tight head scrummaging display I've ever witnessed was that day with Paul Wallace. There's no doubt about that. And it was a great day, and it was a great day for exactly what Dana said. You know, everyone in the country thought we'd lose, and we were weak, and we had no spirit, and all that. And to that generation's credit, they stood up. And we're going to tell a whole lot of lies about it on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say we had this all planned, and this is just what a well-organised, well-oiled machine we are on Off the Ball, that we knew this, we got you two together. This completely passed me by until you mentioned it. But enjoy Saturday. That sounds like fun.
Joe, can I throw one thing in there? Yeah. I mean, if Dana remembers, I hope he does, because we went over to Clonethville in one of the lead-up games. He actually won 16 games straight, which was a club record up until, well, I think 2 years ago when Leo's team won 24 or 25 in a row. And Dunner kicked an unbelievable drop goal at the old Stratty Park there with about a minute to go, and put us in, and gave us a win, which kept us under 30 going into the quarters. And it wasn't a good drop goal; it was an absolute belter from out in the sidelines. So Andy played his part in that that lead up as well.
Yes, you remember Dunner. That? Good man. See, coach remembers.
Yeah, it's nice.
Do you remember?
I do remember. I didn't have a huge amount of highlights, so I kind of live off that one a bit. I've lived off and I've milked that one a lot. So
it was literally at the end of the game, and we got in front. It's a great end to that story. Al Gaffney had been working with Trevor Brennan on his restarts, because Trevor was a very physical guy, great, incredible, not the best.
Was he very physical, Matt? Yeah, right.
Unbelievable. They kicked off, and literally all we do is catch the ball and put it out, and we win the game.
Yeah.
And the ball is sailing over the sideline. It is going over the sideline. It's going to be out before the game's over. And roaring above the pack comes Trevor Brennan and plucks the ball out of the air while it's about a metre and a half over the sideline. We bring it back into play, turn the ball over, and we had to tackle for the next 5 minutes to keep them out. Huh. And we won. I walked into the change room afterwards, and I'm looking for Trevor, and he just looks at me and just says, "Don't say a word. Don't say a word."
It was a hell of a catch.
That's what I like. They had a great sense of humour. They were an absolute pleasure to be around.
Great. Well, listen, do enjoy Saturday. I mean, rare you get to have everybody together again, you know. Nice time to be Tadhg Furlong in life. So the new contract signed, sealed, delivered, and World Rugby released their Dream Team of the Year this morning. Seven nations, five South Africans, three All Blacks, two Australians, and then one from England, France, Scotland, Ireland and Wales. Ireland's sole representative is Tadhg Furlong. So the team, the World Rugby Dream Team of the Year, Stuart Hargett, fullback. We have Will Jordan, no surprises, also Breakthrough Player of the Year, 14. Lukanyo Am and Samu Karivi as the centres. So Am and Karivi as the centre, South African and Australian. Mapimpi on the left wing. Beauden Barrett at 10. No surprise, I think, that Anton Dupont is number 9. And then the pack has Wyn Jones of Wales. It has Malcolm Marks at hooker of South Africa. Tadhg Furlong, number 3. Itoje and Etzebeth as the locks. And then the back row, Khaleesi at 6. Michael Hooper at 7. R.D. Savea at 8. So that is the team. Any egregious error there, Matt?
Joe, I'm going to rain on your parade. I never look at those things, got to be really honest with you. I don't rate them. I think they stuff up everyone's brain. You could argue on every one of those, couldn't you? And you could, everyone could come up with a different area, and you can also validate them all. Every one of them's a fantastic player. I mean, Hooper has just been absolutely immense as an open side. Marks on the bench for South Africa tells you something about it. You could argue for a whole lot of those, but there's no doubt they're quality players, great individual players. But you know, it's like comparing players from generations. I don't know that our game is built for that. Our game is built for the 15 combining as one, rather than picking the individuals out. But it's an interesting project.
Do you approach it with the same indifference?
Yeah, it's a bit like Top Trumps. If you remember them, do you remember them?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just can kind of win, lose or draw, take it or leave it. But yeah, I think your intro around Furlong, I mean, he was a shoe-in, I would have thought, if you're talking about guaranteed starter in a World 15, he would be, for my mind, probably the first name on the team sheet.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's that good.
We'll take that. Look, I plan to get another 20 minutes out of this team, so we're just going to have to press on here, fellas. The weekend then, Road to Marseille begins and all that. 24 teams, we have the 4 Irish provinces, 8 English, 8 French, 3 Welsh regions, just 1 Scottish team in the Heineken Champions Cup. You guys know all about Leinster Bath in Dublin, 3:15 Saturday. Ulster also on Saturday, they're away to Clermont. And then Sunday is an interesting day. Connacht host Stade Francais, that's at 1 o'clock. And Wasps against Munster, live on OTB on Sunday at 3:15. And we'll get on to Munster there. This format, Andy, where are you in all this now? So we're 2 groups of 12. Top 8 will qualify. The format, I would say, is still bedding down. We haven't, in fairness to the competition, had a tournament yet without 24-0 scorelines, and we're getting used to it. But I think, at a glance, if I was to even just say anecdotally to people, what do they like or dislike about it? Nobody really likes the group format because it's too complicated, frankly, to follow at a glance.
Yeah, I would row right behind that firmly. I think it's that's a construct. It's complicated, difficult to interpret, difficult to follow. Now the added complication of a 28-0 bonus point win when you can't field a team for legitimate purposes, that also affects total points difference, for example, and very often at the tail end of a group stage, that's quite pivotal. So it gives a skewed result at the tail end of a group stage at a pretty competitive level of sport. So I think, unfortunately, it's something that has been possibly overthought and become unnecessarily complex. I don't know if I've got the exact solution, but I am, as sound like a, at the risk of sounding like a an old stager who fears change, I think what was wrong with the previous format?
Well, certainly, Matt, nothing was wrong with the group stage model, and I think we liked the back-to-back games and there was a certain rhythm to it. The argument, if you want to make one for the new format, is you get extra knockout games, which hopefully are very exciting come the new year. You get that round of 16, the home and away leg. Maybe that injects a bit of something into the tournament. Now, it may inject complete dead rubber second legs, potentially, depending on scorelines in first games. But that would be the argument for it. And I guess, look, we'll rely on TV to show us the table and where your team is. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't meet too many people who love the change either.
No, I as a someone that just adores the competition, and the best club competition in the world at the elite end, why would you change it? John O'Neill, the former CEO of Australian Rugby, was just been on a recent documentary talking about the changes they made to Super Rugby about 10, 15 years ago that completely decimated. People couldn't figure it. There was conferences. Teams were in, teams were out. And Super Rugby was rating fantastically and moving along very, very well. And really, it has lost all steam. It's still a lost cause 25 years after it started. So all the hard work they did, they lost. And really, the Heineken Cup's got to be careful that it doesn't do the same. Now, it's a much bigger competition, a lot more people watch it. But changing this, and let me tell you why that changed it, Joe. You hit the nail right in the head. But, mate, that's Bugs Bunny. It's Do-Re-Mi. It's the cash they get from an extra quarterfinal. Quarterfinal weekend is the best weekend of club rugby in the calendar year because you've got two games, but all three, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're high-quality games. There's a lot riding on each game. You're in or you're out. You're in the semis. You're out of dream or your dream's crushed. You're on the way. And they just said, let's double that. How do we double it? Well, we'll take something out the other end. Mm. So you just got to be really careful that you don't butcher it up because I have to agree with you. As soon as I started reading the fine detail, I'm going, wow, really? So what's going to happen here? So you could draw an easy pool. And that means you've only got four games, and you've got a huge advantage over someone that draws a hard pool, like and could have much more higher quality games, but be disadvantaged by that for the exact reasons that Andy just spelled out. I'm not a fan of the changes.
And Matt, you're based over in France. What's the appetite for this competition in France?
If you're in Toulouse or La Rochelle, very big. If you're anywhere else in the country, that doesn't exist. Mm. Top four earns everything. Mm. You know, I was only watching the other day. I was watching on Canal Plus here, you know, which is the satellite coverage, and they have the top four earn. And mate, the coverage of it is incredible. And on Saturday afternoon, they have there's a multi screen. So in other words, they cover every game that's on. There's about seven games going or six games going at the same time. And at each ground, there was 25,000 people or 20,000 people, 15,000 like that. The French people go after it, and top four earners everything. Now, Toulouse are going after this. La Rochelle will go after it. Clermont, you know, there's a couple of clubs that have got great traditions in the competition that really rate it. The rest of them don't really want it because it knocks them around in their domestic competition. So it's very patchy as it goes across the country.
Mm. So Leinster-Bath, then let's start with that game. Bath are 0-9 there at the Aviva Stadium. This will be, unfortunately, a case of how many. We've seen Premiership sides in different form pitch up at the Aviva and promptly sent packing home by a big score. And that's going to be the case on Saturday?
I would imagine so. I particularly, maybe less so, based on Bath's history and form and the Premiership clubs that come, you know, for the pre-Christmas game and have taken a couple of hidings. I think in Northampton, Wasps over the years in Aviva. probably more so based on, I thought, how impressive Leinster were last week. I thought it was one of their, arguably their most impressive performance of the year so far. I thought they just looked lethal. They, the skill level, the relentless execution at a high intensity, just, and then the strength and depth, and then the scores they got at the tail end of the game from three young lads who came on and just created this try from nothing through top class play. And you kind of sat back and thought, this is, they looked like, to me, to all intents and purposes, obviously not at an international level, but it reminded me how the All Blacks play when they've lost a match. They just go out and they destroy someone the following week. And Leinster took Connacht apart, I think, in so many different areas. But yeah, I think wounded, competitive group, pretty intense group with huge strength and depth, brilliantly well coached. I don't think Bath have a chance, but I think it's probably more to do with where Leinster are at right now. I think pretty impressive.
Harry Burns come up a bit on the show over the last fortnight. He got his 15 minutes against Ulster, didn't go so well, and then he got his 65 minutes against Connacht, and the word seems to be, based on the fact that he started against Connacht, he's in pole position to start against Bath, but we don't know that. Give us your out half verdict.
I think Harry is a player as a 10 who wants to show how good he is first. I think Ross is a 10 who wants to show how good everyone else is first. It's quite a marked difference as a 10. I think from personal experience, when I was a young 10, I was in the Harry mold. I wanted to show everyone how good I was first. So Matt told a nice anecdote about a drop goal in Clonakilty, but he simultaneously probably didn't tell that he wouldn't have, I don't think he would have trusted me to be a game general at 21 years old and marshal a team really well and make sure everyone else fell into phase and did what they needed to do and everyone else looked great around me. That wasn't how I played as a 10, and a lot of young 10s are like that. It's not, it doesn't equate with their talent level. It equates with where's their actual game maturity and game management. I think Ross has that in spades. He's incredibly good at making everyone else around him look excellent. He's understated. He doesn't get enough, probably doesn't get enough praise for that in terms of how he runs seamlessly into a Leinster team when he doesn't always start with Sexto there and everything. But the interesting thing is if you sit back from it all, Ross will probably run the team better on Saturday, but Harry, I think, has a bit more innate ability and talent. You know, watching, an example would be for Harry, just watching a very simple skill, how he receives a pass and then delivers it to someone else. He does it so skillfully, so silky. And it's a cut above a lot of people I've seen at the highest level. It's this ability to receive and pass while under pressure. But he tries a hell of a lot of things. He tries outrageous things. He tries skillful things. He tries mundane things. He's not so much the game manager that Ross is, certainly not yet. So I think Leinster could get away regardless. On Saturday, I think in a bigger game, if there was more at stake, I'd say they would plump for Ross still, would be my view. I would if I was the coach at the moment. I think Harry is excellent with huge potential. I just think he needs to learn how to be in third gear more often as opposed to fifth, back down to first, into fourth, second, fifth, third. You know, Ross will be in third gear for most of the game and everyone else around him is in fifth.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting analysis. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, very well put, Andy. Very, very well explained. I always remember Lukey Fitzgerald after he started so young and he was natural and he got hurt. I think Dunham might remember. I think it was about 2012. He got hurt and he was out for a long time. And when he came back, he was just trying so hard. He was just trying so hard and forcing his game. And it's exactly what Andy just said. Ross doesn't force his game. He just lets the game, and you can't force the game. You just got to let it, what happened happens, and underplay your hand. I was always told, underplay your hand, underplay your hand. And when Harry came out, when he got his time for Ireland, he was very inaccurate. His kicks weren't where they should be. His passing, even though I totally agree with Andy, he's a gifted passer, he was trying so hard that it wasn't working for him. Now, that comes with experience. You get, the more you're in the saddle, the easier it is. But how do you give them time and win games? So I think Andy's summation is right. I certainly am a fan of Ross. I think he's been greatly maligned because of all the things that Andy said. He brings other players into the game. But I do think Harry's a talent. But I've got to say, I watched a bit of Bath's defence last week or so, just getting ready for it, and mate, they've been very poor. Offset play, wow. Leinster's set play is probably the best in the competition apart from Toulouse. And Bath's defensive set plays were just horrific. And if they defend like that, they'll get absolutely pummeled. Mm. Leinster will score tries off scrum and line out unless they really, really change the way they're defending. Mm. So it may be Harry gets his go, but for the reason that Andy said, I think Leinster will win this one going away.
One last point then on Harry Byrne. Is the obvious advice to give to somebody with his talent, first pass, second pass, third pass in this game, go as simple as you can.
Yeah.
Just make them stick. Get into the game slowly but surely. Somewhere around 40, 50 minutes, things will start to open up. You'll be in the game. Then cruise into fifth gear, show everyone what you got. But first 10, 15 minutes, simple as you can.
It's the obvious advice. It's the advice I got on countless occasions from Ollie Campbell, from my two older brothers who used to watch a game. And it's not obvious when you're 21 and you're full of adrenaline and maybe a bit of ego and et cetera, et cetera. There's just a lot going on.
And to be fair, if you're only getting 15 minutes at the end of Ulster game.
Exactly. As Matt said, if he got 3 to 4 games at 80 minutes, he'd probably eradicate a few of those things. I mean, last night, Tyler Morton started for Liverpool. He's about 19, but it was very interesting to watch. He doesn't get much time on the field for Liverpool. All he did for 85 minutes yesterday was just simple, direct things, involve people around him, and came off the pitch, and Klopp said, look, that's an incredibly mature performance. That's what he wanted. He didn't want Tyler Morton doing backheels and etc, etc. You know,
I think a number 10 in rugby feels an inherent pressure, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Like you're absolutely correct. The advice is actually obvious. But you don't want to, like, Harry's got this kind of a sparkle, you know, you don't want to over polish the diamond either. You don't want to suppress him or his instincts or talent. He probably just needs to dial down the volume a little.
Yeah.
And what would happen then? I mean, he could do a lot worse than look at Marcus Smith, who's probably similar quality or similar style player, but Marcus Smith has played game in, game out for 2 to 3 seasons, and now when he strikes, there's a score or there's a game breaking moment, and the rest of the time he's doing his job really well, tackling, passing, delivering, kicking, good accuracy.
Matt, the last one on Leinster, this may be a question of incredible kind of hubris, and we're very full of ourselves here in Irish rugby, given what's happened to Leinster against Saracens in 2 years and La Rochelle last year. Are Leinster the team to beat in Europe this year?
Well, look, you're never going to win this competition every year. No one does. I don't subscribe to the theory where everyone was panicking when Leinster lost to Saris and La Rochelle. You're always going to lose a game here and there. If you make the semis of this competition, you're a very good team. You're a very, very good team. And Leinster are a very, very, very good team. Depending where they fall, they could. I don't think there's any real clear leader just yet because we haven't played a game. You know, we don't really know. And I don't think we'll really know till the quarters. Toulouse can win it. La Rochelle are not in great form, but they've, because Ronan's there, it's important to them. Mm. They've got a shot at it. And Leinster certainly have got a shot at it. Be interesting to see what Saris and Exeter come out with later in the season. But, you know, I wouldn't say they're the favourites, but I'd say they're in that group. They're the leading group. You know, there's a couple of things there. Culturally, it's really important to the organisation, really important to the supporters, really important to the players and coaches. And when you put those things together and all the things Andy just said, you know, they're a bloody good side and they play sexy, beautiful rugby that I love watching, you're going to be there or thereabouts. And if they can get it right on the day, and they've got it wrong a couple of times against Saris and La Rochelle, they can win it for sure.
Okay. Plenty of time to talk about all that. I saw Keen Tracy of the Irish Independent was saying that they're putting the feelers out for maybe beefier second row overseas signings. Maybe that, you know, that power issue has been brought up at times. Maybe that's a slight deficiency, but there aren't many. To Wasps, Munster, EPCR changed their rules. So they allowed clubs register an unlimited number of players for the game at the weekend, or the games at the weekend. Munster added just the 22 players, all of them under 21 years of age. So they've basically registered everybody. A lot of them have been playing AIL in the past few weeks. There's been talk about the cohort who have returned from South Africa playing on Sunday and flying out even on Sunday morning. 34 staff and players came back last Wednesday, you'll remember. 14 stayed behind. Now, Johan van Graan today confirmed that a number of those who had passed their PCR tests in South Africa and arrived home have subsequently tested positive at home. As to how many or which, you know, the identity, we don't know. Now, thankfully, he said nobody is very sick across the board, South Africa or here in Ireland just yet. And so the third cohort are the group who never went to South Africa in the first place, and they're training away with the academy players. Ian Costello, the academy boss, is looking after them, and the bulk of the match day 23 will come from that group. So that is where they are. Like, you look at the team, Andy, or the probable team, the back line's still in really good shape because the majority of them were rested post-November, didn't go out to South Africa. In the pack, the household names are Peter Omani, Tighe Byrne, Dave Kilcoyne. They will be surrounded by more academy-type players. I haven't seen much of Wasps. They're on a five-game losing streak. I do read that Wasps, this Wasp team, they're not renowned for huge power and beef up front. They score great, exciting tries. So maybe this won't be a big arm wrestle up front, which might have gone against Munster without those key players up front. The way the conversations are going around this game is everybody is saying, look, this might be a strange thing to say, but I think Munster are going to win, you know. So actually everybody's tipping Munster to win this game so far.
I think it's never a position. I think Munster mirror the overall Irish mentality as well. Munster hate being favourites, and I think Irish rugby have traditionally hated being favourites in the periods of great success that seem to come intermittently between World Cups on cue every 3 years since about 2007. When we've been made favourites, we've quickly retreated in terms of our form and clarity and how we play. So I think Munster are very similar. They really dislike being made favourites, and of all the weeks, of all the tournaments and of all the games, they shouldn't be favourites based on the disruption they've had. And I can understand people going, it's like the old, you know, a club is in turmoil, they sack the coach, everything's gone wrong, and then they go out and win the following week, because they literally just have to simplify everything and maybe simplify their entire game plan, their structure and their approach, and it frees up a lot of space for people, because you're going into games with a lot of mental energy expended. When you're with your normal team and your normal setup, you're doing a lot of prep during the week, and there is a lot of clutter there. And I think the best coaches and teams have an ability to simplify that and clarify it for their players. So in these moments of turmoil and chaos amid all these positive tests and return trips and the squad being divided across two continents, I would like to think that could be a moment of clarity or space for them to just go out and give it a go. And under that notion, yes, they could have a good game. But I you could also look then at the cricket, the Ashes. England have gone down to Australia and had a very similarly disrupted approach to the first test against Australia. And when it actually came out to play their first test last night, they were awful. And everyone sits back and goes, OK, well, they had a pretty terrible run-in and preparation. I don't think they'll be in the middle. I think they could have this wonderful one-off performance, or they could well be turgid.
With hindsight, we're going to analyse this game beautifully. It's just very hard to know what's going to happen right now. The other slightly complicating factor, Matt, not that it will affect the game so much, but I just thought it was interesting. Johan van Graan in contract talks with Munster, and he's been there as head coach since 17, which would make him Munster's second longest serving head coach, has been linked with Bath. Bath 0 for 9, as we mentioned. Big spender still. Maybe that's an attractive proposition. But I don't know. Like, Johan van Gran is very even keeled and has kind of managed things okay, I guess. He would never have struck me as massively hot property. Maybe I'm doing him a disservice. Keith Wood was noting this morning on OTBAM, you know, not to be a cynic or anything, but these links often arise when you're negotiating with your current team. But I don't know. Do you think would Van Gran be popping up on shortlists in rugby around the world? Like, has he done enough in the Munster job to make Munster be worried about Bath chasing him up?
Well, just. Firstly, Joe, long may the English cricket demise continue. I was very happily awake at 2 a.m. listening to them falling wicket after wicket. It was great. look, yeah, I think Johan's done a job at Munster that people very much underestimate.
Right.
The trouble with taking over a club like Munster, let's put aside our knowledge of the club as in, you know, as competitors and so on. That was a great club that dominated for a decade and won European Cups, produced all-time great players and a couple of absolutely all-time great teams. Then those players retired, but the expectation didn't change. They all still wanted, you know, you've got to keep winning forever, and it doesn't work like that. And I think he's gone in there and he's rebuilt. He's the academy's coming through this week. I think this week will be very interesting to see where the Munster Academy boys are. No pressure on them. They can come out and perform. And I think he's done a lot of pluses to rebuild that club up to where they are. And again, we perceive Munster as, or I certainly don't, but some people perceive Munster as failures because they keep making semi-finals and lose. If Bath could make the semi-finals of all those competitions, they'd be popping champagne corks every year. Because that's really hard to do. So I think he will, could be, but I certainly agree with Woody. A good manager gets alternatives to drive the price up. And Johan's, you know, following the age-old example, you don't get what you're worth, you get what you negotiate. So if he negotiates well and gets a few extra quid and stays, good on him. If he feels that he wants to get out, that he's used by a day, his effectiveness is finished, Bath's a pretty good alternative, except you'd be dealing with an owner who's got a reputation for, you know, buying players without talking to coaches and things like that, that sort of stuff, which is very, very hard to manage. So, but yeah, I would think that someone that's coached Munster for as long as he have would be very much a prospect for some clubs across the UK.
Yeah, okay. Clock's really coming against me. Sorry, I've gone on too long, so I'm not going to give Ulster and Connacht the time they deserve, and my apologies. We've talked a lot about them over the last number of weeks. There are some rumours, I suppose, reports from Ewan May make his debut, but I've seen them shot down since. So Claremont, Ulster, and then Connacht host Stade Francais in Galway on the Sunday at 1 o'clock. Matt, you'd have a feel for where Claremont and Stade Francais are. What kind of threats are they posing for Ulster and Connacht?
Substantial. They both had very good wins on the weekend. I watched them. Stade are a long way off their former pomp. I actually think Connacht got a good shot taking the Parisians to the showground. Wow, they could really struggle out there on a cold, wet day. That psychologically, Claremont are not. They're a different kettle of fish. They'll be very, very hard. This is a big, big test for Ulster against Claremont. But Connacht, I've got to show it. The other part is, I don't think Stade Francais are going to take their best side. I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But Stade are in a very precarious position in the top 14, and that's where their focus will lie.
Right. And they've Bristol, I think, in Paris the following week, which maybe has that more marquee, let's win that one anyway kind of vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No Ian Henderson for Ulster. And if Vermeulen doesn't play, Claremont pack, big, beefy, strong?
Yeah. They mauled Bayreuth off the park the other week. They're you know, big dudes, hard runners. Still got the two old generals running their halves. You know, they're still a formidable organisation, especially in Claremont. They will be, you know, they'll really go away from home. You know, they're not as formidable. But again, they're a club culturally that desires a European Cup. They're a club that their players, supporters and owners expect performances within Europe. So, again, a very different French mindset than perhaps a Lyon or even a now Stade Francais that are a long way past their best.
Okay. Very last point. Wanted to squeeze this in. We were talking to various head coaches in the build-up to the Heineken Champions Cup as part of the media days, and we asked a bunch of them, what law change would you make if you could change one law in the game? Rob Baxter here of Exeter gave maybe the more effusive answer. So here's Baxter's take on the law he would want to change.
Stop changing the laws. The biggest rule I would change is stop changing the laws, not rules. Come on, you know that. That would be, so the biggest law I would change is stop changing the law. It's the biggest frustration. It's the biggest frustration to me that every reaction we have as a sport is to try and change the laws to try and make it this game that so many people say they want, which when we don't even know that. I think it harms it from a spectator's point of view, because how difficult it is to become a new spectator of rugby, because the laws or their interpretation of the law, it has to change non-stop. And we're continually trying to create a game that supposedly everybody wants, and yet we're also being told, on the other hand, that our biggest challenge in the game is head injuries, and yet every law change does what? Tries to speed the game up, have more ball in play time. So you want to do away with long periods around scrums. Why? People don't get head injuries in scrums, but they get them in tackles, so you want more tackles. People talk about caterpillar rucks take too long, so we want more ball in play time, more tackles. That would be more head injuries. So at some stage, we've got to just go, what is it we want? Do we want to try and have a set number of laws that coaches work around, work with, find different ways of playing? If you've got a particularly strong pack, you might play in one way. If you've got a pretty great set of backs, you might play in a different way. But the laws don't need to just try and force people into how you play. You know, teams will adapt as things happen. There won't ever be just one way of playing rugby. But we seem to be a sport that keeps telling people how they play and telling coaches how they have to coach and telling, instead of it being an innovative coaching process, it's just all about changing the laws. And I think that, to me, is becoming quite frustrating. Once you've been in the game for quite a long time, as a coach, it just gets more and more frustrating.
Quite a thoughtful answer, I think. I can already bet my life if I ask Matt Williams what the answer is going to be here. Can I take a punt here?
Mate, Ian Chappell, Australian cricket captain, said the only good thing England ever did for cricket was invented. and you can see why. Like, we just had a series of international games where the ball was in play. The maximum the ball was in play in the internationals over November was 36.7% of the game.
Yeah.
And that was an Irish game. Now, we've got to get the ball in play longer. I totally reject what he said there. We're in the entertainment business and we're in the fun business for the players. Standing around the field at scrum time, yeah, every scrum for 2 and 3 minutes is not fun. Getting a penalty from every scrum is not fun. Seeing a maul driving over the try line is not fun. It's not fun for anyone. It's boring.
Don't give me this crap
about head injury. You're going to get more head injuries because you've got the ball in play. Like, come. If you've got a one-on-one with a player, you're not going to, you know, you might, but you're going to have to be really desperate. Where you get the head injuries, people slamming into each other at ruck time. Mm. We've got to open up space and open up the field. And now, I agree with Baxter on one thing. Get rid of laws. Get rid. Every scrum should be a bent up. Shouldn't be a penalty. Get rid of them. They should get rid of the fair catch. Every time a player goes for an intercept, they bring out a yellow card and we go up to the TMO. Get rid of it. Just say it's a knock on. We should be getting rid of a whole lot of laws that mean absolutely bugger all to the game. They're just administrative clutter. I agree with him there. Mm. But to suggest that we don't need a clock on scrums or that we don't need to get to change some of our laws is ridiculous. We need to change the interpretation. I'll give you an example. If you put it without changing any laws, you put a second referee on the field who was an assistant referee, but he just stood on the defensive line, so everyone has to be behind him. You create a lot more space. It's not changing any law.
That was my point. My punt was going to be, Matt Williams is going to say, forget about changing the law. Let's enforce the offside. That was my guess. Yeah.
Get him on side, Joe.
Every game in a Virgin studio, Matt's bemoaning the complete ignoring of the offside rule in every game.
Well, if you're a young Andy Dunn, you're a 10, you need time on the ball. Sure. In other words, you get the ball in hand, you need a couple of seconds or a second and a half to make some decisions. Our kids now get no time to make decisions because they're getting the ball and they're getting the defender because the defenders are all offside.
Yeah.
So we're not developing kids because they're not developing their skills because they've got no time on the ball. So You know, to say we don't need to change, wow, where's the game going to be in 5-10 years when the next generation comes through who have had no time on the ball to develop these great skills? It breaks my heart, actually, to hear that from a leading coach. Yeah, you need innovation, you need all that, but let's get rid of it. And here's mine. We'd have to change a few things, and it's very hard to explain in a short period of time, but we've got to move the defensive line back well and truly behind the last feet of the ruck. Now, whether that's 5 metres or 2 metres or 1 metre, you know, we could talk about how you logistically do that. But right now, they're in front of the last feet and no one's got any time. Yeah. We have to create that time.
All makes sense. Very thoughtful. Andy Dunn, final word. What do you want to throw in here?
Well, I'd like to think I'm younger than Rob Baxter. I think I am. I'm 42. How old is he? Probably mid-50s. But I feel like I should join him on the balcony. You remember the Muppet Show, the two cranky old men?
Statler and Waldorf.
Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah.
I'm a curmudgeon. I'm like, this is why democracy works, because I'm the opposite end of the spectrum to Matt. I'm closer to...
He's 50.
Okay, so we have an 8-year gap. I think I would like to see an existing rule policed better would be the scrum feed. So there's zero tolerance on the line-out throw. If it's 1 degree crooked, the ref blows the whistle. Yet every single solitary scrum feed is like 45 degree crooked as they come. If you actually police the scrum feed to be dead straight, you are going to change the physical profile requirements for like five positions in your pack. You're going to need two heavy lumps of timber as your prop. You're going to need a lighter, smaller hooker because he needs to get into this really obscure position while under physical stress to hook a ball. He's got to rotate his hip. He's got to get his heel around the ball. So he's got to be really small and agile. Therefore, he needs two huge props and he probably needs two bigger, chunkier second rows. That all in turn to me means you've got five positions out of 15 where the physical requirements are very, very different, and those type of people are not athletes, which means there's more space. They're not like, roughly now you could run, you see the national anthems, and you used to see huge variations as the camera went up and down and across and across and across of certain people.
You could see the centre.
Yeah, there's like 13. You saw Dan Sheehan, an incredible player and athlete, leave Mac Hansen for dead with a like inside outside sidestep and then burns three other people. You used not to see that from front rows. So I'm like the old curmudgeon up in the Muppet Show. I want to see scrums where like they
bring,
last
bring
for 3 minutes.
Bring back the fatties. Is that what Andy?
Yeah, bring back the fatties. Yeah. Scrums that last forever. Alienate new fans, etc., etc. not quite that curmudgeonly, but I do think if Matt was to pick one, which is makes a lot of sense, I think to everyone is police the back foot for offside. I would like to see, regardless of the tongue in cheek sentiment, I would like to see the scrum feed police better. Yeah.
Okay, very interesting. That's probably your podcast all in itself. That conversation, Matt Williams, great to talk to you. Thanks, Mil.
See you guys.
Andy Dunn.
Cheers, Matt.
Thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
And our rugby coverage was with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.